previously on Viewers Like Us.
We need to look at how there has been one dominant narrative, which has been told from a white point of view in America.
Why is PBS so white? And how exactly did it designate Ken Burns as America's storyteller, as if there's only room for one?
It brought up a lot of different questions for me, like, do I really want to start my career in a place and in a system that may not fully support me in my work?
One afternoon in the summer of 2020, while I was sitting at home finishing lunch, I got a panicked text from a friend telling me her career was over. Geeta, who's like a sister to me, had gone on Facebook and called out two white filmmakers, whom she barely knew, about one of their latest projects, an HBO documentary on golfer Tiger Woods. Now, Geeta Gandabir is known in the documentary world, and this world, it's really small. People generally support each other because making movies is hard. Making documentaries, it's even harder. Geeta has won Emmys. She's edited films that have been nominated for and won Oscars. And she's not shy about speaking her mind. In her Facebook post, among the congratulations and notes of support, Geeta wrote,
"Why did you both, two white men, opt to direct this film?"
She didn't stop there.
"Was there not a director reflective of the community on this project? If there were two of you, couldn't one of you have been black or Asian?"
This exchange happened in the midst of the George Floyd uprisings, when many white colleagues were pledging solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movements and promising to do better. Here's Geeta.
"I'm thinking this is a film about a very complicated man, Tiger Woods, who is mixed, is of Thai and African-American and then also Native American descent. And his struggles with race absolutely define him and his career." So the team, as I kind of run through the list of people.
Geeta saw that everyone tagged on the producing team was white, except for her mentor, Sam Pollard, an executive producer who's black.
Who's a fixture in the community and an elder and just one of the most amazing people in the world.
One of the other executive producers was Alex Gibney.
"One of the most powerful documentary filmmakers that there is, with a company that gets a lion's share of the funding."
So for Geeta, publicly criticizing a production that included Pollard and Gibney, her former bosses and mentors, was huge and nerve-wracking.
"I immediately posted it and then was terrified. I was terrified that I would face a tremendous amount of anger and backlash from the greater community who had already congratulated him. And I feared the loss of income. They say the squeaky wheel gets greased, but when you're the squeaky wheel and you happen to also be a BIPOC woman, oftentimes you just get shoved out of the room."
Once Geeta became that squeaky wheel, there was no turning back. People started more threads on group chats and Facebook, creating a social media frenzy within our small documentary community. When members of the Brown Girls Doc Mafia, an online network we belong to, joined the conversation, the press started reporting on it. Within our circles, we started calling the whole thing Tigergate. Geeta's courage and vulnerability inspired others in the documentary world to speak out about similar issues, including me. A couple months later, I wrote an essay about PBS and its over-reliance on filmmaker Ken Burns. That led to even more conversations about whose stories were being told in public media and who gets to tell them. One of those conversations happened at a meeting with the president of PBS. And Geeta and I were there. Welcome to Viewers Like Us, where we investigate the growing gap between PBS and its founding mission and ask, what would it take to restore the public to public television? I'm your host, Grace Lee. Do you have any predictions of what that meeting's going to be like?
I think it's going to be awkward. I think it's going to be really awkward.
That's me and Geeta Gandabir talking ahead of a meeting we were invited to, along with several of our colleagues from Beyond Inclusion, a BIPOC-led group of documentary filmmakers and executives. When Geeta was in the middle of Tigergate, a nascent Beyond Inclusion, had her back. After I published an essay a few months later about PBS failing to live up to its mission, Beyond Inclusion mobilized once again. We wrote a public letter requesting data from PBS and got over 700 filmmakers to sign it. And when we got a bunch of press coverage, that's when PBS president Paula Kerger had to respond. So about that meeting.
They'll probably do a lot of listening and note-taking and thanking people and saying, we're taking all this information and we're coming back to you with a plan.
Geeta knows what she's talking about. After speaking up about the Tiger Woods film, she got multiple calls from its directors and executive producers who were hoping to contain a public relations crisis. So with that in mind, in May 2021, we and seven others from Beyond Inclusion joined a Zoom session with PBS leaders, executives, and other filmmakers, about 30 of us in all.
Some hellos. Hey, Maria, Aggie Carter. Hi, Grace.
Hi.
Leslie.
Hi there.
Hi, Bernardo.
We're up to 21 people.
This was the first time I had sat down with so many PBS gatekeepers at once. Paula Kerger established the tone right away.
I have to say, Grace, I've wanted to talk to you for a long time. It is particularly appropriate that we're having the discussion this week, one day after we marked the one-year anniversary of the murder of George Floyd. As I've thought about this meeting, this could be an interesting discussion that we have, or it could be a watershed moment. And I feel that that's the place our country sits in right now as we look at...
As she was speaking, I kept thinking back to Geeta's prediction that this meeting would be about...
Well-intentioned posturing and deflecting. You know, because I think it's just sort of the idea that the angry hordes need their moment to vent.
There was a lot of circular talk that felt like it was going nowhere.
This is an opportunity for us to begin to talk about what data we have and what data we don't have, and then talk about really how we move forward and where are there opportunities and what are some of the things...
But since we had asked for numbers, they gave us some. Kerger passed the mic to her chief programming executive, Sylvia Bugg.
35% of our primetime content were produced by BIPOC creators. 56% featured BIPOC talent, production, or covered a diversity-related topic. And 54% of our...
I have to admit, I had a hard time following. These percentages felt slapped together without much context. So here's a bit of what we were asking for. The number of content hours created by BIPOC directors, as well as the funding and resources given to these filmmakers versus white filmmakers over the last 10 years. We weren't getting any of that. Sylvia's data was based solely on the previous year, and it wasn't complete.
Data points from different content.
As the meeting went on, I felt the exasperation building in our group. That's when Po Si Tang, a film executive who's in Beyond Inclusion, and is the funds director for the International Documentary Association, made a final pitch about why this data mattered.
I think for a lot of organizations, there's always this desire to control how they want to be accountable. The thing with numbers and putting it out there is that the public decides, and that's a good thing. But again, if there are no specific numbers, no organization, no individual will ever know how far they need to go.
Because data can be shaped to present different narratives, we need those baseline numbers if we want to measure how well PBS is meeting its stated goals. After 80 minutes with no break, everyone seemed ready to leave. The meeting ended on a cordial note, and our group immediately got on another call to debrief. Filmmaker Marjan Safinia jumped right in.
I think, Christy, you said it so well, right? That room didn't look like what these rooms look like.
During the meeting with Paula Kerger.
So let's start with Christy.
Hi, I just want to raise that, like, it's really great.
Filmmaker Christy Jacobson, another member of Beyond Inclusion, pointed out that the participants on the PBS side seemed more diverse than the actual leadership.
It also looks very different from the graphics, for example, that we created just from our own research in terms of, like, the...
Just a week before, Beyond Inclusion had released a flyer listing the executive leaders of the three largest public television stations. Imagine a yearbook page with mostly white faces staring back at you. So this representation we saw didn't feel genuine. In our debrief, Marjan put it this way.
They literally tapped in every BIPOC person that they know. And that's not who we need to have the conversation with. How do we create a situation in which Paula invites the white dudes and says, you need to listen to what these people are saying?
In the debrief, we mostly shared our disappointments with how the meeting had gone. And then Bernardo Ruiz, a veteran Mexican-American filmmaker whose documentaries have played all over PBS, had something to say.
It's quite frankly a problem of leadership. I've had participated in these conversations for at least 2 decades. I remember sitting down with Paula when I served on the board of NALI, the National Association of Latino Independent Producers, and having this exact same conversation with Maria and others asking for data and transparency.
Okay, hold on. So he's been having this exact same conversation for 20 years? Turns out those conversations, those working meetings that he was part of, featured the same main cast of characters, Paula Kerger and Ken Burns. See, back in 2007, Latino scholars, activists, filmmakers, and members of Congress fought with PBS over Burns' World War II documentary series, which clocked in at 14 hours.
The war touched every family, on every street, in every town in America.
This is what Bernardo was talking about. He'd been here before, and he had the receipts. One of the documents he shared with us later was a letter from a civil rights group, the National Council of La Raza. Here's an excerpt from that letter.
The exclusion of Latinos from the World War II series appears to be part of a pattern. Even when he interviews people of color for his films, he still controls the narrative, still tells the stories from his point of view, then pats himself on the back for including us at all.
One of the people copied on that letter is Maggie Rivas Rodriguez, a journalism professor at the University of Texas at Austin. In 1999, Maggie began an oral history project about Latinos and World War II. Her research helped spark a campaign that challenged PBS over Ken Burns' documentary.
The Latino World War II experience was such a pivotal moment for our people. Before they went into the military, they were regarded as Mexican, even if their families had been here for generations and generations. So for Mexican Americans and Latinos more generally, World War II was that watershed where they came back from serving in the military and they had a different sense of themselves. They weren't going to take the same treatment that they had been subjected to before World War II.
By 2006, Maggie had collected hundreds of stories. This was around the same time she found out that the World War II series didn't include any Latinos. So she reached out to Ken Burns' office and eventually got his publicist, Joe DePlasco.
And said, hey, listen, I'm trying to confirm this. This is what I've heard. Is it true?
His response to her was this.
There are no Latinos because we were trying to tell a universal story. I just felt like time stood still because he was saying, not only are we not part of the universal American story, we don't even have a unique Latino story. I sent emails to everybody who I thought could give me some advice of how to proceed. How can we stop this train wreck before it goes on the air?
Maggie rallied leaders of Latino political organizations, journalists, and filmmakers. Their efforts got a lot of media attention, even from the PBS NewsHour.
A Latino veterans organization raised concerns that the series overlooked the contributions of Latinos to the war effort. They also say this is not the first time Burns has excluded Latino contributions in the topics he's covered.
After months of trying, Maggie and her fellow organizers finally got their meeting with Ken Burns and Paula Kerger. But only after a massive letter-writing campaign, national press, and buy-in from the Congressional Hispanic Caucus.
By the time we met, I was seething pretty much. So I refused to even drink any of their water because that's how angry I was. And basically, it was just a pro forma thing. They were just saying, he has his artistic vision and there's nothing we can do about it. But I knew that we had the moral high ground in this fight.
In the end, a couple of Latino organizations brokered a compromise with PBS and Ken Burns' production company. That compromise? 2 brief interviews with Latino veterans at the end of episodes 1 and 6, separate from the rest of the film.
One thing that Ken Burns would say was, I'm getting criticized for this, but all people have to do is look at what I did with jazz and what I did with baseball. And then I heard from somebody else who was a jazz musician in New York who told me that Latinos were never given their fair share in the jazz documentary. And in baseball, there was just a short mention about
Roberto Clemente learned his baseball in the cane fields of Puerto Rico. And for all of his major league
This
career,
is much bigger than Ken Burns, bigger than PBS. It was much bigger than World War II. This is about the continued invisibility of Latinos in our country.
Hearing Maggie's story felt like a gut punch. As she spoke, I kept thinking, this is happening all over again. Why has nothing changed? How many other Dear Paula Kerger letters have viewers like us written over the years? I now know I'm in a long line of people who have taken on similar fights with PBS, including someone I considered a mentor. And her fight started 2 decades before Maggie's campaign.
Lonnie understood the power of the media.
Lonnie Ding was a force of nature. She was a Chinese-American filmmaker born in San Francisco, and her films were about and for her community. Like Survival English Lessons for Immigrants or a 1970s kids show reflecting the Bay Area's diverse neighborhoods.
And they tried to make me super American. Oh boy, I can see, here we go again.
She also made groundbreaking films about Japanese Americans incarcerated during World War II, all for PBS. But her dream project was
10 episodes of the most comprehensive history of Asian Americans that certainly had been successfully envisioned at the time.
That's Don Young. He's also part of Beyond Inclusion, and he's been working in public media for over 20 years. Lonnie hired Don as her associate producer in the mid-1990s. Until then, there had never been a comprehensive documentary about Asian American history. Lonnie was raising money for this series while teaching part-time at UC Berkeley. Her daughter, Mei-Ying Welsh, remembers.
Fundraising for Lonnie was a heartbreaking experience. She was constantly going from funder to funder, source to source, trying to add up little amounts of money here and there, trying to get support just to tell this really basic part of American history. This is after Lonnie had won multiple awards for her films on Japanese American history. This is after she'd testified before Congress and helped to get reparations for Japanese Americans for the internment during World War II.
Lonnie was used to testifying in Congress.
In our view,
here she is speaking at a U.S. Senate subcommittee hearing from the 1980s about the need for diversity in public media.
The worst change for us is to see the steady march of public broadcasting away from its original mandate of public service, innovation, diversity, and 10 years ago, the public would have been here in the sense that consumers, minorities, labor, church organizations, commercial broadcasters, business, women's organizations, media reform activists, they all came and expected to be heard because it was theirs. It was something they had a stake in. So we have to ask, where is the public in today's public broadcasting?
Just to keep things in perspective, that's from 1987, before Maggie rallied her community, before Beyond Inclusion. It's like an endless loop, this conversation. We're still asking the same questions today. Lonnie gave me one of my first jobs in film. Back then, I had no idea how outspoken she was about PBS. But in researching this podcast, I learned that only 8 years after PBS began, Lonnie was on a task force asking why PBS was falling short of its mission when it came to minorities. I know she helped create ITVS, the Independent Television Service, and the Center for Asian American Media. Both organizations help filmmakers get funding and access to the public television system. All that organizing and networking left Lonnie little time for the epic American history series she was eager to make. I can relate to that a little too well. Here's Don Young.
She was ultimately able to produce three of the episodes, all three of which did air on the PBS primetime.
What was supposed to be 10 episodes ended up as three. As a reminder, Ken Burns is making a four-part series for PBS on The American Buffalo. Lonnie's daughter followed in her footsteps as a documentary director and cinematographer, but she never considered public television for her path.
Never. I stayed as far away as possible from public television because I didn't want to spend my life begging for money. I went straight into the private broadcasting sector where I received a salary and benefits, and I had an employer who had to worry about the money, not me. And that's directly because of watching my mom suffer, trying to make her films, her award-winning, priceless films. I didn't want to suffer like that.
Lonnie Ding was 79 years old when she died in 2010. I'm grateful for the path she created for people like me and Don Young, who's now director of programs at the Center for Asian American Media. But I often wonder what she'd make of the fact that we're still fighting the same fight in public television, to make it consider all of us, the entire American public. And yet PBS continues to uplift a single voice to tell us who we are and where we've come from.
I have had the privilege of spending my entire life making films about the U.S., capital U, capital S. But I've also had the privilege of making films about us, the two-letter, lowercase plural pronoun that has a kind of intimacy and warmth to it.
That's Ken Burns on 60 Minutes. And I still want to know who he means by us. Just for the record, I invited Ken to talk with me for this podcast several times. But his publicist, the same guy who told Maggie that the Latino story wasn't universal, said Ken was too busy promoting his Muhammad Ali documentary on PBS. Now that Ali has aired, we extend an open invitation to him. Beyond Inclusion is still waiting for PBS to share the specific data we asked for. I've also invited Paula Kerger onto the podcast, but after several back and forths, she passed me on to her programming chief, Sylvia Bug. We'll keep reminding them that information is the first step towards accountability. Next time on Viewers Like Us.
Did I make an impact? Clearly not. We're talking about this 14 years later.
Following the controversy over the World War II documentary, PBS tried to clean up the mess. And we found the person the system hired to do it.
There's this tremendous fear to talk about this.
This show is a production of Studio To Be and Lili Films. Our executive producers, Joaquin Alvarado, Ken Ikeda, and I, Grace Lee, created this podcast. Akintunde Ahmad is our investigative reporter. Linda Miller leads our investigative research. And Andy Becker is our fact checker. Cheryl Duvall is our story editor. Suzanne Reber, our consulting editor, and Olivia Elmer produces the show. Claudia Meza does our audio mixing, composition, and sound design. Thanks to her for editorial support, too. Chloe Behrens, Sonia Paul, and Marina Castellanos handle additional production. Thanks also to our funders, the Ford Foundation, Just Films, and the MacArthur Foundation. And a very special thanks to Beyond Inclusion, whose organizing work this podcast builds upon. You can hear Viewers Like Us on all your favorite podcast apps. If you'd like to support our story, please leave us a review. It really helps more people find us. We'd love to hear from you. Connect with us on our website, viewerslikeus.com, or email us at hello@viewerslikeus.com. Thanks for listening.